Hey, y'all, in this episode of the Carolina Chuck Podcast, we're going to talk to Watertown City Councilman Cliff Only. Y'all check him out. Be good. Peace out.
I was like, oh, somebody's calling you, you know. So I had to start getting cameras and everything. Well,
I appreciate you inviting me in.
Yeah, no, I'm glad to have you.
I was trying to picture what this would be like in different, in the way it would be different than with Tyler, where we're sitting in a formal setting here.
Tyler's a cool guy. I've actually had him. He was one of the original guys on my original show where I was doing at my dining room table. I met him at the radio station, and he had this real professional sounding voice when he went on the radio.
Yes.
And then off the air, he was so freaking funny. I was like, I got to get this guy to him.
Yeah, he has that. He has that way. And it's funny to see the difference between the on-air personality and also then the off-air. They know they're on air.
Yeah.
And it's like, zip, hi.
Yeah. I mean, he's got personality, and he's starting to come out. It's starting to come out a little bit, and I like it. It's pretty neat. Yeah. Well, I wanted to talk to you because I met you at the Irish Parade. That's the first time I actually met you.
Okay.
And I was doing driving the Marshal, the Grand Marshal. I got to slide out of work early and drive the Grand Marshal, and I figured, and then I saw you. I was like, wow, this
was up. Was I in the viewing area?
You weren't there. You were actually back at the beginning of the parade walking around with, I can't remember who, but we met, we shook hands and stuff. I didn't really introduce myself that well.
We walked one parade, I remember.
Yeah.
There was like myself and I think two other council members. And I don't know if it was in that one, but it was fun to do.
Yeah. It was the first parade I was in. Then I ended up in the dairy parade after that, which was kind of cool, too.
Well, if you do one parade,
back in the truck. I think I'm a parade guy from now on.
Can you put me in the parade? I'd rather be there than up on the stage where
everybody
has to set when they
set that up for us. Yeah. So I wanted to start here. How long have you been in the North Country? Because we spoke on the phone. You said you've been in different areas.
The North Country is my home, my mother's home. She's lived here all her life, and her family's from here. So it's kind of weird. When she married my father, she said, and she's told this story before, she wanted new blood. She didn't want to be marrying, somebody that was from around here because it could have been a relative of some kind. She had an uncle that was in the Navy, and my father was in the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they were serving together, apparently in the room where they were, Dad saw Mom's picture in my Uncle George's, belongings.
Yeah.
Who's that? And so, off to the races they went, and they had this long relationship of writing back and forth to one another. And I said to her, how many letters did you guys write? Oh, I have a whole box of them. So if you remember the movie The Notebook with Nicholas Sparks.
Oh, yeah.
they wrote back and forth, and then they eventually met each other. He was from Burlington, Vermont. And so they got together, and eventually, I think it was like the eighth time that they saw each other, they got married. And so I'm the oldest.
Eighth time.
I know things happened differently back then. But it was nice. And I'm the oldest of five children they had. And so they have. And she has, and because my dad passed last August. He's 91 years old. And he, he told me, I had a long talk with him before, at that time. And they had 32 grandchildren. If you can imagine.
Goodness gracious.
So they really, all together, they were, they stayed together through everything, and they had a lot of hardships. But Dad being from Burlington, all his family was from over there, and then he moved here, and they've lived around this area for most of the time that they've been alive. So she still lives here.
Wow, so they move, and the Watertown area specifically?
Watertown area. Yeah. Now, when I got inaugurated, I talked to Tom Walker, former Mayor Walker.
Mm-hmm.
He was there for that. And we got talking about the ancestry in Watertown, how he came here from where he did, mm-hmm. and how he fell in love with the town and enjoyed his time as mayor. And I said, you know, so we got talking. And I said, well, you know, as my last name may not know that my mother's side of the of this is a lot of the ancestors that founded Watertown. And he says, really? I said, yeah. If you recognize the names, like Gray, the Whitneys, Delano's, the Flowers, all of these people, way back, I mean, we're talking like when the town was first thought about, yeah. like 1799.
Wow.
So we went through that whole thing. And it's interesting because I've moved away, lived in cities like New York, Miami, Boston, Buffalo, Rochester, you know, down in Florida, and then back here after living in those places. And in 1984, I decided to come back just before Fort Drum came because I wanted to open up a hair salon.
Yeah, and, yeah, some nice hair, by the way.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. I still have people come up and say, hey, you cut my hair back then. It was great. You still do hair?
That's what I – so how did you end up – what made you leave? How did you leave?
After high school, I just wanted to see what was out there, you know, what other opportunities there were. And living mm-hmm. Lived in Canandaigua for a while and worked in construction with my father. And then I got laid off and went to Buffalo, drew unemployment while I went to hair school. And then we went to Rochester, and it was just – it was interesting to see how other people lived.
Yeah.
And then coming back here after being somewhere else and then seeing how we were doing things and how Watertown was a little behind, you know. You know, you can bring ideas back from other places.
Yeah.
I did a lot of that, you know, with different things. I went up to Maine, mm-hmm. and there was, like tri-color houses up there. I had my house up on State Street where my hair salon was, and I mm-hmm. said, this is gonna, I'm going to paint a gray rose color, like pink and a blue. And I did, and it was like people were going by the house going, where'd you think of that? Well, I didn't think of it. It was they did all the time in New England. But and then more and more people, you see more people now doing three colors on their houses. So ideas come back from different places, and as people travel and they come back to Watertown, I think they bring a lot of those things with them, hopefully. And you know, so this is my interest right now, seeing that done. Houses, but other things.
Right, and other things. Yeah. That's what I was going to get. So you went from, how did you end up decided you want to get into politics?
Well, it's an interesting story. My I have six children, and my daughter Marissa was born prematurely. Mm. Had insurance. The company dropped us when they found out she was born premature. They told me that it was cheaper for them to litigate it than it was to pay the bill of $280,000 for her to be in the hospital for 3 months at St. Joe's. She was a little tiny thing, just about a pound and 9 ounces when she was born. And so over 3 months, she matured. Now she's 37 years old. She's getting married in November. But we fought for the insurance to cover her after they had dropped us. And I felt it was wrong that insurance companies could do that. So I got involved in politics because of her and the insurance company dropping us, and fought for national health care reform back in the Obamacare days. And then I turned my attention to Watertown because there was an election going on at the time.
So you got involved in politics. How do you mean you got involved in the part of that fight you were just talking about?
Yeah, the idea of health care, to me, I felt that, you know, if you bought an insurance policy, you should be covered. And when the insurance company decided that they didn't need to, because there was a law that said they didn't have to and they could drop you, mm-hmm. I went to my politician, the guy that was here locally, Bob Norris at the time, and I talked to him about it. And he says, that's how it is. I said, well, that's wrong. And at the time, I was a Republican, and I switched parties over to Democrats because they seemed to be more with the idea of universal health care for people. Mm-hmm. And so I started, like, writing letters, calling Congress people, all that kind of thing, the activism, right? And then here locally, we had a group of people that were on city council that didn't want to see the Thompson Park pool rebuilt, wanted to cut the fire department, didn't feel that there was any need to build more for young people in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, wait a minute. I said, you know, Thompson Park has been, you know, a place where families have gone to for years. I used to go up to that pool. And why aren't you guys interested in rebuilding the pool? I started finding out exactly what they felt versus what I felt was right to do. And then I started, I got together with a lot of advocates, started advocating for the pool, fought for that pool to get rebuilt. And then we
and this is with no official title?
No official title. Nothing. No, I've been a citizen, like an advocate for different causes in the city long before I got into an actual office. And we'd go out, you know, I would see something and I would get my Facebook Live going, you know, and talk about whatever. And so we fought. We got people elected to public, to the office of the city council. And those people actually fought and got that pool and the park built. And it was interesting because just seeing what you can do with raising your voice and then getting people together and fighting for something that you want to see accomplished was like, it was a game changer.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, you can make a difference. Hmm. You can go in there and actually talk about something. And then if you present it well enough, people agree with you, they're going to back you and back the idea, and then they're going to support it. And that's what began to happen. So a lot more started happening in the city. So I ran, actually, this time that I'm in now, this is my fourth campaign. I ran the first time back in 2015. And then the next year, Chuck, I ran in 2017 and then 19. And then this last time in 2020, I got into office. In 21, I was in office. And it was a hard-fought contest. And nobody expected me to win. I'm progressive, and in this area, it's a very conservative area. And so now we see a lot of things happening and changing in this area right now. So that's fun to see.
Yeah. No, I have... I've noticed just since I got here, because I think I got here the right at the end of 21, September 21.
Yeah, 21.
Yeah,
September. That's about 20. The time.
Yeah, I've been here for 3 years exactly last month, and yeah, I've seen you all over Facebook, and what really caught my attention was obviously Facebook, and then you're the only person that's got personalized memes about you around here.
Oh my God.
Which is which is wild.
they love me. That's my group of supporters over on the meme page. Started, by the way, because I felt you know, I'm looking at the ways of changing people's views on things, and they say a picture is worth 1,000 words. Well, there was a young artist back in around the turn of the century in New York City. His name was Thomas Nast. He worked for Harper's Weekly, and he was brought in by the newspaper because there was a politician, a corrupt politician, used to be a state senator, Boss Tweed, they called him. And the Boss Tweed group, nothing in New York City happened unless Boss Tweed authorized it and made a cut on whatever was being done.
Okay.
And what I had kind of likened what was going on in Watertown with different projects that were happening is if it was among the good old boys club that they wanted something done, it got done. But if it was for the people in general, we don't have the money. So they had this attitude of austerity, and I thought, okay, this has got to change. So I started looking at ways of changing people's opinions about the way things are being done. Now, the reason they brought up this concept of political cartoons back under Harper's Weekly was because people were basically illiterate. They could write a 500-word article, and it just wasn't resonating with the people enough to get the support to make the change and bring about the difference that they wanted to see at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked at that and I studied it and I thought, you know what? There could be some of this being done here. Now, I'm a graphic artist I do graphic art.
Really?
I used to have a coupon business where I mail out direct mail, AmeriCoupes. So I said, I can put this ability to work. And I started making memes of things that I thought were poignant.
Yeah,
and a little bit sharp, elbowed in harsh words, and it began to catch on, and people, and it made a difference in the way people started to see what was happening in their city, and of course, and now over the course of time, I have a group of people that are trying to emulate, I guess, form of flattery, what I'm doing, but the Watertown meme page, sure. I mean,
hey. You know, it ain't, honestly, it's almost like there's no such thing as bad press, because what I've seen on there and I'm not, honestly, I didn't come up here to get involved in politics or anything crazy, and I'm just observing, but sometimes I'm like, I've actually fact-checked it, you know what I mean? Like, I would go back and look at what they're talking about on your page or somebody else's page, and so really, whatever they do is kind of just drawing attention to whatever you're trying to put out there anyway. So it's kind of, I don't know if it's helping them or for their case or not, but.
Well, you've made a good point, because I think what they've done is brought attention to the very things that I've been saying is happening here when you look at what's going on. I think the difference is that when people have more information, they make different decisions about a policy or a direction that they may or may not want to go. My belief happens to be, over a period of time, with seeing what government has and hasn't done, is that I believe that government can do more for all of us than any one of us can do alone. So we're a cooperative, but you have to have smart policy that guides the decisions of the people that make those policies. And some people don't feel the government's there and shouldn't be there to do much of anything, that we're all on our own, laissez-faire capitalism. Mm-hmm. You get into the beliefs of what government can do. I don't believe it's a hammock. It should be there as an incentive, and it can be. And once it creates an opportunity in an area, like here, for instance, you see people rising up and say, hey, I think I could do something. You want to give people an incentive, an opportunity to do more, all right? Mm-hmm. Now, some people, they're not going to do that. But I think the difference in what I see now and what I feel can happen in Watertown, and the reason I've got into politics and now I love it, it's that there is there's opportunity here. We see a lot of things happening. We see the Watertown Wolves and the Rapids coming, right? Mm-hmm. Baseball. We see you guys here now having this this station and what you're doing.
Yeah.
More roads have been paved, more streets fixed, more wheelchair ramps installed. If you look around the city, I was just talking to our new engineer, Tom Compo, no relation to the mayor. he makes that clear all the time. But he says, Cliff, he says, he was an engineer for the state of New York, and he kept looking over across from the building on Washington Street at what we're doing. And we needed an engineer since Cyrus left. And he applied, and he's been hired. And he says, since I've been here, and it's been 20 years, he says, and I've taken notice, he says, I have seen more things being done in the last 2 years in this city than ever before. And I said, well, it has to do a lot with the COVID money. We got an American Rescue Act. But the other thing that's happened is that you got a different vision about what can be done with government here. And I'm pushing back against some of the status quo views. I call it extractionism. When a mindset of politicians that want to extract wealth from the system for the benefit of the few, okay, versus invest money that belongs to the people that pay it. I mean, all the property owners, sales tax revenue comes in. Instead of investing that money into new venues, better roads, more infrastructure, more, let's say, recreational venues, skateboard park, more quality of life issues, more trails and things for people to enjoy, reasons for people to come into our city. Mm-hmm. All right. When you have them, when we have us having that mindset, doing that kind of thing, versus what has been going on for the last 20 years, taking from and giving to a certain group of people, you begin to see the changes, and people start looking and saying, you know what, maybe I can do something here. Maybe investors decide to come here and invest because they see there's the city that is making the investments that we should. Maybe that we begin to draw people into our city and take a look at us, and more people want to be here. Before you know it, you got a place like in Allentown down in Buffalo, where a lot of people are there. It's a colorful, crazy place. It's young people that want to go there, an art district, music district. I'm trying to get a theater group that does movies to come here with some grant money. And so it's fun to do. It's a battle because there's people that don't want to see this because the status quo benefits them. I get it. Yeah. And that's been the conversation right now.
Yeah, so, yeah. I've honestly, there's been the experiences that when I came here, I'm like, I'm from the South, and this, I'm nothing bad to say about Watertown, but I've had some experiences that I'm like, that's about 20 years behind where I came from. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, what the heck? You know what I mean? Some of the things I say, I'm like, what the heck? You know, like far as the racial tensions and stuff go, I'm like, wow. Like
up here
versus where I came from, where they're trying to say that there's more racism stuff down there. But when I came up here to this place in particular, I'm like, this place is some of the stuff I've heard and experienced. I'm like, well, this is kind of behind. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. And I have seen that kind of thing. And it's more regressive in that. I think it comes from a lack of information and having the availability of information in order to embrace and allow people to more fully embrace diversity. Personally, when you have a city, for instance, like New York City or any big city like that, you have all these different groups that are there. Mm-hmm. I've lived in New York City, and I know, and I don't think a thing about people that are different than me. They're all people. We have more in common with one another, all of us do, than that we have that's not in common. And if you look at how people are controlled by the powers to be that want us to be controlled, that want us to support what they're trying for to achieve for themselves, all right, not for us as a whole, not as a, you know, as a society, but it's divide us into express the differences between us. It doesn't matter what race you are, religion, I think, gender, all those things. People care about their families. They care about their health. They care about having enough money to take their kids on vacation. All of these things are important. Quality of life issues, right? Mm-hmm. And up here, you got a limited news source. Now we have cable. But I'm amazed, too, because I remember I got off the bus from New York City back years ago. It was in the mid-'80s. And I had a long trench coat on. Most everybody in New York City wears a trench coat because they got rain down there and different things. And I had a shoulder bag, which I still wear. I have, but which is a little different. And I got off the bus station on State Street, and I'm walking up the street to my mom and dad's place on Bronson. Mm-hmm. And I'm walking along, and I have, you know, kind of longish hair, and about, I think there was four guys in an old beat up Chevy with broken shocks in the back without a muffler system that could have been repaired. One guy, he's, you know, like this, and I'm like, I look over like that, and he yells out this derogatory term about an LGBTQIA individual who, hey, so-and-so, you know, go back to wherever you're from. Mm-hmm. And I looked at him, and I'm from Watertown. I mean, I've lived here, and I thought to myself, I said, really?
Yeah.
I mean, really? So, and they had long hair, and it was like, you know, come on. I mean, so I understand what you're saying. It should be easier than that.
Yeah.
One thing I have seen, and it's one of my observations here in town because of the things I work on and what I try to answer for questions that people ask when I'm on council, is that there's many, many different levels of understanding among people.
Yeah.
From way up, and you got your professor types to people who probably didn't finish high school and started a family early. And, so you got all of that. And so we make rules as legislators to like the lowest common denominator among people. So we try to, for instance, you and I, when you're riding your bike down the sidewalk, and when I do, I go slowly. If I'm coming up behind somebody that's walking, hey, how you doing? Good to, you know, see ya. And the person will turn around and go, hey, how you doing? And then we recognize each other so that we can use the sidewalk together mutually. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going along too fast so I can accommodate them and they can accommodate me, which is like the thing to do. Many people have rules inside themselves. They have morality. They have their own way of looking at things and develop that, right? But you have to, in a society, you have people that don't, and they would, you know, take advantage of something if they weren't told, don't do this.
Yeah.
And so the rest of us that do have those rules have to live with people who don't have those rules, and so we have to have something. And you know, so recently we're talking about like some kind of a policy that we would pass for e-bikes, because some people are like zooming down the sidewalks at 35.
You know, right, right.
Somebody comes out of a doorway and whack. I can see this about.
Yeah.
So, but we don't have streets that are designated with green paths for bike paths in the city yet on the main things. I personally, I'm not going out there. Because I'm mindful myself. You are mindful. There are a lot of people that are mindful when they're driving or walking or biking. There are some people that are not mindful. Oops. Well, man, I'm sorry. Didn't mean to run over you.
Cliff, I'm going to tell you something.
I mean, seriously.
I got to tell you something horrifying that almost happened to me.
Yeah.
I was coming across the Court Street Bridge.
Right. Yeah. No, just where it is.
And I had to come home because we had a new refrigerator delivered, and apparently the delivery guy was being difficult, so I had to leave work, rush home, and hey, what's going on? Anyways, they already taken care of the problem. Frustrated, I had to leave work. I'm coming back, so I get to the bridge,
right?
And I'm not in a rush or anything. I made it sound kind of like I was in a rush, but. I come across the bridge. There's a big truck next to me, right? So I'm about to go back towards Bradley Street. Well, I'm going to go straight up Luray, is it?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And anyways, so it's a green light now, right? And then some lady's coming across. Didn't see her because she obviously there's a red stop sign for her not to walk across the road. The car in front of me goes, and then I'm going down the hill. I can't see to my left. Nothing should be coming.
No.
You know?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, a lady, you know, doesn't look right in the face. You know, her eyes kind of bugged out. Pushing a baby carriage. Comes right in front of me. Like, I almost ran over a baby. She looks at me. She goes, ah. And then she looks behind me and goes, ah, again. I get hit in the back. Boom. I'm like,
you get hit in the back.
Yeah, I got hit in the back.
You're slamming on the brakes, and someone behind you is following too closely. Yeah.
So I mean, there is.
But you didn't hit the.
No, of course not. I didn't hit the. But I was like, can you imagine if I had a freaking ran over a baby? Like, oh my god. But there's some people just not paying attention out here.
No, everybody's in a big hurry to get somewhere, and they, you know, like my father. He slowed down a lot as he got older.
Yeah,
you know, and we all do slow down a little bit more. I remember coming in from Rochester when I was living down there, and I'd get off from 81. And if you know Rochester at all, there's a can of worms over there where all these different highways interlock, and you have to. It's kind of like our square. Everybody's going around in different ways. And so you get used to traveling at 75, 80 miles an hour through this kind of complex maze of roads, and it's like second nature. You don't even think about it. Same thing in New York City. After you get there for a while, you just, you know, it's part of what you do every day. And so when you get off, it's an adjustment. I'm sure you've probably felt this coming here from the South or wherever, if it's a bigger place. You come here, and it's like, okay. And I got off, I remember I was driving off from 81, and I'm driving along, and I'm, you know, when I'm in when I was in Rochester, I was talking sort of like, you know, like I have friends down there, the Puerto Rican, and they're talking, hey Cliff, what are you, you know,
yeah, blah, 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 blah. Yeah.
And like, you know, you're right, the repartee is like back and forth, it's almost like machine gun fire back and forth between, and you get up here, and I think we talked about this a little night the other night when I was talking to you, and one observation I made was that when you get to Watertown, you sort of get off from 81, and you get on Arsenal Street. And it says 30 miles, or no, you don't do 30 miles an hour anymore out there. But, you know, we're trying to calm that down. But so you go slower, and you get into the city. And I notice being around the city is people have kind of a drawl in their way, not just their speech, but in their, you know, hey, it's cool. Yeah. And it's almost like the mid-70s when people were like that, you know, then. But it was probably they were smoking some weed. They slowed them down. For that reason,
I mean, but, to me, people talk a little faster than I'm used to, but there is one thing I know it's
different here.
It's weird. It seems like everybody, even when they got the right of way, when they're crosswalking, they slow down in the middle of the road. I do not understand that. Everybody
moment of zen.
Yeah,
it occurred to them. I'm here.
Yeah, they're like, oh, I'm in the middle of the road. I'm usually like, I'm used to people scurried across, you know. Right. You know, it's just, that's another weird thing. But no, yeah. I really like it. Honestly, I like Watertown. It reminds me of a lot of back home, right? Because it's a smaller place.
Yep. Yep.
Everybody's into racing and hunting and stuff like that. But I come from right under Charlotte, so I have some a lot of experience. Like when you go to work, you go to Charlotte. So I would, you know, I'd come home in the kind of the country, then I'd go out in the big city of Charlotte and riding 485, 277, like just like you're saying, some of those roads, you're getting it. And but then you come back home and you got the little one stop light and all that. But anyway,
you pace yourself according to where you are. I noticed, and I have friends that when we talk, when we get together, it's like, you know, repartee kind of real quick. And then, and I sometimes find myself speaking more quickly on counsel than maybe I should. But, or, and of course, the thing I get accused mostly of there is, only you talk too much. I mean, just what is it you're asking these questions for? You know, I, what are you asking these things for, Paul? You know, you should do your homework. Well, you know, Chuck, the thing about this is that there's a lot of complex things we discussed. Like last night we were talking, we had a work session about disinfectant byproducts. You know, and when I first started looking at that, I researched it extensively. I was a field engineer. I don't do mechanical or any of that kind of engineering, but I understand things. And I looked at it and I thought, okay, are there other things besides what they're proposing from this engineer firm that might be done that's less expensive? So, and I thought, okay, maybe lowering the amount of chlorine we use. I want to know the questions. I want to know the answers. So there was one night I asked something, and I remember one of my colleagues on there said, I don't need to know all the details of this. I need to know, I have expert staff here, and all I need to know is what they tell me in order to know how to vote. And I was, I'm not kidding. And I said, wait a minute. I said, my job is to second guess people and to ask questions here on this council. Yeah. That's what I do. And when I ask a question about something, people, I mean, Paige teased me all the time. Oh, you know, you do your homework before you go. You just look through the paperwork when you get there. You know, I see you thumbing through your stuff. I mean, okay, I get it. And it doesn't bother me, and they don't bother me. Actually, it's kind of flattering, you know, they think that much and pay that close of attention. I'm glad. And then they, like you said, amplify it out to a lot more people. They follow them. Maybe some of them will start to, you know, it'll occur to them what I'm doing. But it's necessary because you want to explain to the public, okay, we have this very complex thing. We're going to be spending this much money, a couple million dollars. I think the public deserves to understand what that project is and why we're having to invest that money. And if it's necessary. I was told, I was out to Walmart a couple of nights ago. We got a couple of things, Mary wanted to go out there. And so I'm walking through, and we got to the checkout. She got over the checkout. I got to my checkout, and the girl that was there, I was going doing my own checkout stuff. And the girl that was there, she knows me from back when I had the hair salon. She says, we like you asking questions. I said, you watch? She says, oh, yeah. She says, I'm from Evans Mills. I can't vote for you. She said, but we watch you. And she says, you seem to ask, you say the things that people are thinking. You know, it's like you're saying the things, you're asking the questions that people want to hear answered. You know, and she says, I've never seen anybody go in there and ask questions about things like what we would like to know. You know, and then, you know, the difference is that Watertown's council, actually, we legislate there, right? We make rules, pass laws, ordinances. And the county legislature is different in that it has committees. They have their own committee for health and human services and whatever else, right? And so they meet in those meetings and they do their own thing. And then they get to the meeting for the general and they have like 23 minutes and they're done. They're done for the night. And so on News Junkie, and I don't know if News Junkie is actually putting it up for this reason because it's good or it's not being looked at as good. But, you know, so I still haven't determined that. But it'll say, county legislature meets for 23 minutes. Like, they're really hammering it. And then I get the comment from somebody who'll text me or Pam, and they'll say, only if you'd shut up, their meetings at City Hall would be a lot less time too. And I said, you know, I'm not trying for a record. I mean, I know there's some on council that are looking at their watches, like, you know, is it time to go yet? I'm there to do a job, and I'm having fun doing it.
Don't it make you feel good stuff. That people are watching you, though, and make you feel...
Yeah, well...
Well, I'm saying the lady, like the lady at Walmart.
Yeah, it does. It makes me... Yeah.
Makes you feel like you're doing what you're supposed to.
I think so, because when I was talking to somebody that I know quite well, and he says, you make this all about yourself. You love getting on TV. He says, seems like you're always getting on TV. And I'm like, I do get on TV. I make myself available to the reporters. They know that I'm always there if they need a question answered. And I'm glad to do that, because that's part of what I want to communicate, what we're doing to the public. Okay.
How else are you going to reach the masses? You know what I mean?
Yeah. How else are you going to do it?
Yeah.
But I said, it's not about me. I said, I didn't run because I'm not there for me. I don't need anything, really. I mean, I'm there to do a job, and I'm there to help people. I ran. I was an advocate for people before I became a representative for people. And I had a friend of mine tell me, he says, well, you can't be a representative and an advocate, because once you become a representative, you're going to have to abide by what the city needs you to do. And here's the thing that's key. I think it's important for the public to know. So if you're listening, you can hear this from me, is that I don't work for the city of Watertown, okay? The impression is that you do when you get hired by the people. The impression is that, you know, that's the case. And anyone that goes to Congress, they don't work for Congress. They work for the district. They work for the people that either voted or didn't vote for them. You know, you work for both. And the residents in this city, they elected me to go in there and question what's going on. Now, if I happen to see there's a situation where one of my residents, one of my constituents, have a different position than the city, and the city's, in my opinion, position is incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
I am an advocate for the resident, not the city. I'm not a rubber stamp for the city's position. If the city, for instance, I'll give you an example. There was a pollinator garden over on Pleasant Street not too long ago. They grew plants in their yard for butterflies and for bees, okay? And it was determined, because we have a law that's an antiquated law that says that you can't have anything growing on your lawn that's longer than 14 inches is, you know, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so it did, and then they were written up, told they couldn't do that, and then the contractor was sent over through the city to weed whack all of it. And now they had children. This guy is a retired military man here, and he's decided to stay in Watertown with his family. His wife and he are into this pollination garden type thing. They have, like, I think, 4 kids. And so it was a family project. The kids are all involved in this as well. And they saw our city, our agents go there with weed whackers with no regard for what the family wanted and mow it down. And then to add insult to injury, the city said that they were going to pay them. The family was going to pay like $349 or $400 to the city for the contractor who went and destroyed their garden. And I said, no way. I put up a resolution. It said, we are rescinding that money. And I had 2 other council members vote with me on it, and then we rescinded the fee. And I felt that it was wrong. Now, that was, I advocated against the city's position, which was that this family should pay this money. And I said, no. And it's the same thing. If I feel that somebody's been wronged in the city by the city, if the city feels, the city is, in my opinion, Chuck, the city is us. It's us. And, you know, somebody going in there and representing us should be looking out for us before it looks out for the city as a whole. You know, I'm fully aware of what my responsibilities are.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so one of them, you know, yes, I'm going to look after the fiduciary responsibility of the city when it comes to making sure that things are done so that we can get the proper revenue coming in to pay for things. But, you know, it's not about... All of us had government do something to us over the course of time, not fair, not right, and disappointed, and then felt that there was no recourse for that having been done to us. And I think it makes people feel that something can't be done. And so maybe, you know, if people began to feel that something could be done with what they have to say by their advocacy, by them standing up and saying, no, I don't agree with that. Maybe things would change. And I think that is more my view on government, because I'm coming in from having had things happen to me from and by the government, right? And here's the irony. I'm a Democrat in party, but I believe in common sense.
Yeah.
So I think the real people say, well, you don't sound like a Democrat. I said, I don't know. What's a Democrat feel or sound like? Mm-hmm. I don't know. What is a common sense approach to government, smart policies look like? I think it's about people and about investing into things that are going to make people have a better life here and encourage people to move to our city. So, I mean, there's a lot of philosophical things that I think about while I'm in office. And in this particular idea of what the city is doing, I think that we have a huge opportunity here to grow this city in ways that have not been explored yet. And it would be a lot more fun to live in a city like that than it would have been in a city that, well, we can't afford it, we'll have to cut some things. Yeah. I mean, who wants to live in a city like that? You can move.
Yeah.
If you don't want it. You know, I had somebody, and this was an answer they had last year. We can't afford 3 pools. Well, I don't know. A city this size can't afford 3 pools. And I thought about this. Now, it sounds like a great campaign theme, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're on that side of extraction.
Yeah.
So don't give the people what they want, mm-hmm. so that we can give more to our group here that want what they want.
Yeah.
And this is what it's been here for so long. So I said, no, this is not the case. A city this size can afford anything it wants. A city this size can do anything it wants to as long as the people have decided that's what they want to do. And I said, and it's not the size of the city that determines how many pools we can have or how much we can buy or build or do. It's the size of the vision of the leadership that's here. That's what it is. And unfortunately, we've had leaders that just don't have vision. They're building maintenance managers. All they do is come in and make sure that the leaks are fixed and this kind of thing. I'm talking about something that's so much higher. Yeah. Look at a vision of the city that could be different and exciting. And, you know, and then what? I'm the bad guy because I'm bringing out these ideas and saying maybe this is possible. I don't know. That's just my belief.
I'm curious. Yeah. Now, you were like you're saying the people that are going against you are pulling trying to take the funds and do other things with it and for a smaller group. Can you elaborate on any of that or?
I can. There's been times where, for instance, the last year was about purchasing some land in the park. Okay, you probably were there for the golf course and 63 more acres in Thompson Park. Okay, and how I saw that was back in 2017 was the city had decided, the government of the city had decided mm-hmm. that they would, and it wasn't right then that they did it, but before, that they would give a subsidy. They would underwrite the cost of that golf course by about $60,000 a year, which doesn't seem like a lot. And the way it was sold to the public was that it was developing recreational activity in Thompson Park for the city residents, right? Mm-hmm. But what I did know was that when I did the coupon mailing, I mailed a coupon for that club. I'll buy one round the golf, get one free to 20,000 homes. That went out, and the club itself got back like 3,500 coupons. It was an amazing response back. And so I went back up to talk to the owners and the management of the club, and I said, and it was owned by a private group then at the time. This is a while ago. And I said, well, how did it go? I said, you got a lot of coupons back, huh? Yeah, oh, my God, we got buckets of balls, free this and that and lunch. And I said, so you want to do the next mailing? Because we have one more before the winter comes, and you guys could. Well, you better talk to the manager. And I said, okay. So I go and talk, and they said, it did work. It worked really well, but it just got the wrong kind of clientele up here. And I thought you were trying to get more people in. Mm-hmm. Municipal golf courses, how it was been advertised. The $60,000 a year that was been given to this club,
mm-hmm.
Discount on the below market lease that was being given to them to operate this golf course for this group of people, this club, these stockholders, right? And I said, what kind of people are you looking for? Well, people that respect the game of golf, and I guess people that don't have to take a shower after work, and that kind of people. A municipal golf course. So it was being portrayed as a municipal golf course, but it was really being operated as a more elite kind of a place for people.
Really?
And I thought, and so I said, you don't want to mail again? Well, no, we got the wrong kind of people coming up with those coupons.
That's what they said.
And so I knew that it wasn't what they had portrayed it to be. I knew that what was being said to the public was a lie, right? And unfortunately, we ended up with that. And I said, when the opportunity came this last year to Lundy, he wanted to build houses and things up there, and I felt that it was the wrong thing to have in the park for myself, and a lot of people agreed with that. I said, we need the extra 63 acres. We can pick that up. He wants to sell it because they were using parkland for parking, and it says in the deed covenant that you shouldn't, if you do, it could revert back to the family that donated it to us. We could have lost the entire park, but they didn't tell people that. And so this small group of people were jeopardizing the use of our entire park because of their own interest. And so I said, when the man that owned the club wanted to sell the club, I said, we'll look at it. And we ended up purchasing the land, and now it is truly a municipal golf course. It is a golf course that anyone can go to. We have had more rounds of golf played up there, and our own city crew has done such a phenomenal job. People are going there now saying, it's a great golf course.
Yeah, it's really nice.
You've been up there yourself.
I've
been
up there since
Jordan.
Yeah, Jordan's my buddy.
Jordan, you know Jordan?
Yeah, I like
great
Jordan.
Guy.
Yeah,
he went to
awesome.
School.
He's, matter of fact, he's been on the show.
Has he been on here?
My dining room table.
No kidding.
Right,
well,
before the eclipse happened, I brought him and Jim on.
Yeah.
Talk about it.
My daughter knew him. I think he went to school with the two of them, and also
he went to South Carolina. He's a Gamecock.
Yeah, special Columbia. Golf school and all this stuff. And anyway, the point was is that he has turned into a phenomenon up there, and the golf course is working, and it's really some place where people enjoy going, and it's welcome. Everybody's welcome. The idea was that it was supposed to be that all along, and but yet when you have some people using the city's resources to benefit themselves in their own small group. Now, people say, well, I don't know how that's a case, Cliff. You say this, they say that. Well, yeah, I know they say a lot of things. I'm not in there to, in any way, what I ask myself is, what do I need? Mm-hmm. And it gives me personal satisfaction to see us growing and more being done here for the residents. Right now, we're working on a skateboard park over on Sewell's Island. We want to build a skateboard park for young people. You know, we need enough money. And if anyone's listening, you can go to the Northern Foundation and donate, okay, so you can get that. We got to get the design done, and we hope to build it sometime soon. And that'll be nice. So more for young people, more for older people. We just finished a senior center here. We got over 600 members
really?
In a year's time.
Where's that at?
Yeah, it's in the Marcy's building downtown. It's just up the street. I'm looking out this way, right here, on the first block going up in the back.
Really?
You go up the elevator, and there's a senior center that's open 3 days a month, a week, Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. That started with an idea. One guy had stood up at city council, talked about it, and then Bob Avalon, and then a few other people got together. We met together over at the library. We spent time there, and then we put that together. And now you got people up there playing nickel bingo, tai chi. I mean, it's amazing to see young people up there and old people, 50 years older. So we've lowered the bar because we need younger guys that can dance with older women.
So. Yeah.
Anyway,
that's awesome.
But there's got to be a lot of things that Ivan, even gotten toward that you have that you want to talk about.
Oh, man, I was just wanting to get to know and honestly hear a lot about what you had to say. And, I mean, it's going pretty good. I'm sitting here enjoying it.
Good.
I'm like, well, wow, good. I didn't know all this was going on. And it's good to have, know that you're in there doing that kind of thing because I don't really know what goes on in town meetings. I mean, I guess I do. They talk about town stuff, but I didn't know what your take on it. As long as you're out here looking out for like the people, like you were saying, because that thing what you said about the golf course, when they said it was bringing the wrong type of people in here, I'm like, what the heck? Because I used to work construction.
Okay.
And we would leave right after work, and sometimes we wouldn't have a polo or something to pop on, and I'm feeling like, wow. We would hit municipal parks in North Carolina, and kind of made me feel, I don't know, it's kind of made me feel terrible right now.
Well, if you look at the city as a whole and some of the things that have been done here, Chuck, it's, we had a tale of two cities for a while. I brought up this issue. I said, I think that the north side is like the poor cousin because it really was lacking in infrastructure. The pool up on the north side, we wanted to finish that, get that built back. It had been left for like 3 years. So we did. We put in the, money into the pool and the north side. It was one of the busiest pools in the city this summer with all those kids over there.
Yeah.
I mean, it was exciting. I went over there to watch. I was standing on the hill, and all these families were there. They had blankets out. They had, you know, like picnic baskets. The people were, kids were running through the splash pad. And so we built, rebuilt the, but you'll laugh. That pool was 2 years in the making, right? And they were telling me they're trying to not have it done. So they came back with like this price tag of that was way above what it was supposed to have been. I thought it was less. It should have been less. So they came back with a number. I said, where are you getting that number? And so I said, I got to look at it. And so I went over there, and I got Parks and Rec to give me a ladder. And a buddy of mine who used to work in the code enforcement department and also in the fire department, and I went over there, and we walked the roof on the building. And I walked, and I had my camera. And having been in the engineering field for a while, I'm looking and going, do you think this roof needs to be replaced, Todd? He goes, no. I said, so there's $1.5 million in the design of this roof, all right, because engineers came in and they said, well, you know, we need to raise the roof up a foot and a half, foot and a half. I said, why? He said, well, because we have to hide the mechanicals. I said, the mechanicals? He says, yeah, the vents and the pipes and things, you know, we can put them up above the ceiling. I said, and $1.5 million to raise the roof is perfectly fine. I said, we don't need to raise the roof. We can put the mechanicals in the vents and the fascia on the outside of the building. I said, and then we're just going to, he said, well, we're going to save some money on that. So when Todd and I finished walking the roof, I got done. I said, I came back to the meeting and the engineers were there. I said, we're taking that out. We're not raising the roof. And everybody's looking at me like, what are you talking about? And I looked at Lisa and Patrick and I said, we don't need to. I said, but for that, it's $1.5 million in savings from not having to raise the roof up, which is what these engineers were telling us, the architects were telling us. And I said, we're going to put a splash pad in there. Okay, so the money that we would have wasted on a roof that didn't need to be replaced, we got a splash pad over there for the kids to use, and that was something that they wanted in the area.
Yeah.
And so we got a pool and a splash pad for the Northside kids, and there's more families over there, more apartments than anywhere else in the city. And they were fighting us every step of the way from building that pool. And I said, we don't build, well, you know, there's enough pools in the city that people can use. I said, you're going to let them use yours?
Right.
I said, we don't build pools for people that have pools. We build pools for people that can't afford them and don't have room in their yard. You know, so it's been fun in that respect, Chuck, you know, to see, you know, the changes, to see the accomplishments. And for who? The people.
Yeah.
They deserve it. It's their money. I said, there's nothing wrong with letting and spending the people's money on what the people want. And that's what we should be doing right in there. And for some reason, I'm being seen as like this guy who's going to spend us into oblivion. I thought, what are we talking about? I said, you know something? I said, in the last 6 years, well, let's say since 2019, the city of Watertown has a deal with the county. We get 24% of the entire sales tax revenue that is generated in the entire county from the county, right? So, for instance, New York State, we charge 8 cents on a dollar here. New York State gets 4 cents. The county gets 4 cents. We get 24% of that 4 cents, almost a penny. And the first year in 2019, that equaled $19 million, okay? $19 million. In, that was 2019. Last year, it was $25
million. Wow.
Yeah, $6 million increase that year. Every year has gone up. Now, I said the opportunity is not to raise people's taxes and property. The opportunity is to develop more retail, more reasons for people to come here, to visit, recreation along the river, kayaking, all that stuff.
Yeah.
By doing that, and retail sales, you sell cars, right? Every single car that's sold, we get a percentage of that in the city. Why not invest that money into more recreational activity? Why not put billboards up on 81, letting people know there's a zoo here? And you know what? I don't know if you saw the billboard on Arsenal Street of the zoo.
Yes.
You know, up there?
Yep.
I fought like hell to get that. I said, you know, you want to run the city like a business?
Yeah.
Businesses advertise.
Advertise, yeah.
Yeah, right. I mean, you put advertisements on television and the car dealership. What kind of business would you do if you didn't advertise? And so, you know, the difference is that here in the city, they talk a lot.
Mm-hmm.
They talk a lot. Well, you know, to run the business, we're going to run the city like a business. Well, you know, how do businesses run? They advertise.
Yeah.
But what are we advertising about our city? What are we saying to people on 81? We got 8 million cars a year going by our city.
Mm-hmm.
What are we telling them about us? We're not telling them anything. We don't even have any billboards out there until I fought like hell. Then we got some money, and the zoo got that, and the zoo put those billboards out on 81, one of those digital billboards. It was fun. I drove down. I said to Mary, my girlfriend, let's drive down toward Adams. We'll come up 81, and we'll see the billboard. She says, you want to what? She said, you nuts? I said, no. She said, I know what you mean. So we come up. I'm looking, and in the distance, here's this, like, a mountain lion on this big digital billboard at night. It's dark in this, you know, Zoo New York.
Yeah,
I went, yes, I put a high five up in there. Yeah. I'm like, that's what we needed, you know, and now people are starting to see that's what we have to do. And, you know, I don't know why it's a fight with me over what I think needs to happen. I think I'm right.
Yeah,
and I'm willing to gamble and bet on it and push forward to it. So that's all. I just think
I'm gonna we'll close it right here. But here's one thing that it's similar, and it's my only take on small town politics. My dad told me he yelled at me when I was a teenager because I bought gas in another town.
Oh,
he's because he worked for the town of Clover. He's like, he said, don't do that. He goes, if you're gonna spend money. Spend it right here in town.
Keep it in town. Buy local.
Yeah.
I agree.
100%. All right, Cliff.
Hey.
Appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Okay. It's good to meet you, and I hope this turned out good for everyone.